Well, we're joined in the studio once again by Robert Reeves, who's the House Minority Leader in the State House and also the representative for District 54 in Chatham County and Randolph County. It's the start of a segment called Robert Rules. Happy to have you back in the studio, Representative Reeves. Thanks
happy
so much for
here, Brighton.
Of course. Of course. So 2 weeks ago, a good chunk of the segment was spent talking about the state budget and the lack thereof of a state budget. This week, it still makes sense to be talking about that because state budget isn't here. And we just heard from from Speaker of the House Tim Moore earlier this week that they're not expecting a vote on it until September. Yeah. That would be, you know, significantly into the fiscal year without a new budget. And we talked about some of those challenges last time we had you on the air. I wanted to focus specifically on Medicaid expansion, too, because we've heard from Cody Kinsley, the director of Health and Human Services for the state government, that their hope to roll out Medicaid expansion, which was, you know, celebrated earlier this year when that was decided on, that's in October. Yeah. And if a state budget isn't coming until September, that leaves them with quite the squeeze. So can we start there? How much of a challenge is this timeline going to be for the state's plan to roll out Medicaid expansion if we don't have a budget until September?
Well, Secretary Kinsley has taken an aggressive stance in trying to go ahead and get things moving. But ultimately, what we've got to do, especially with this budget impasse, is decouple Medicaid from the budget. And there's no reason to have it tied to the budget. It's an independent vote. It's an independent issue. It has nothing to do with anything that's going on with the budget. It's an understood, if we decouple it and we go ahead and get Medicaid going, then we'll also understand that the budget needs to reflect that Medicaid is now part of that budget. But it's really unfortunate. We've had tens of thousands of people who are rolling off at this time that would be covered under a Medicaid expansion. You've got Secretary Kinsley and all those folks with DHHS who are really, really working around the clock to make sure that we're ready. And it's a difficult time. And we just had another hospital close. And we just can't keep doing things the way that we're doing. And especially on an issue that unfortunately became more of a political issue than ever was about the people. Because, yeah, when it comes down to the people, there's no issue. Medicaid expansion saves people who have private insurance money, saves hospitals money, saves doctors money. It does nothing but help everybody, and it's an infusion of money and jobs into the system. So really the only reason to oppose it is political.
As you said, these people are rolling off of plans and are kind of stuck in this gray area. Can you explain how we got to this point?
Well, I mean, it just started with the ACA from the beginning. And again, it was from what I understood when I got in 2014, and obviously the decision was made by Speaker Tillis before I got there, but not to expand Medicaid. It was more about a strike back at the then president and federal government. And again, it's easy to be political with somebody else's life and money. You know, it's easy for me to say, you know, well, Brighton, I'm tired of the way that you're spending money over there, so I'm going to take your money and I'm going to keep it and you figure out how to survive, because that's what we've done. And it's really a shame. I mean, we became one of the last few states in the entire nation to expand it. You had tons of red states that were expanding Medicaid. And again, it's just a good fiscal decision and it does not hurt anybody. And again, if you want to take a hard political stance, then you turn down your insurance. But you can't turn down insurance for people who need it, because beyond, I really can't think of anything more important that government's doing right now than making sure that we have good health care for our folks.
Now, you mentioned your hope to split Medicaid from budget discussions. We know that the Senate leader, Phil Berger, was pretty much on board with Medicaid expansion before the rest of the House Republicans were. What do you think the likelihood is that he will kind of warm up to that idea and maybe present it to Tim Moore in these negotiations?
Yeah, I could not presume to know.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, again, where everybody said that they're for it, but, you know, we're making it a lot more complicated than it has to be.
Yeah.
Again, it's one bill, one push, one decision, change a couple of sentences, and we've got Medicaid expansion. So, it is an interesting time when you're looking at a supermajority, and you've looked and, you know, and all I heard last election was a desire for supermajority so they could rule and do whatever they wanted. And the only thing that we've done is not get a budget. You know, we've got the same. In fact, we've got a worse budget impasse now than we did when the governor had more veto power and we were able to sit and negotiate a budget. And I think that it's just we've lost the ability to compromise even between parties, it seems. or yeah. within parties, rather. So that's unfortunate.
Well, I'm happy you brought up the veto power for the governor, because I think that's an interesting wrinkle here, too. If the budget isn't, again, going to be kind of voted on by September, he, of course, could veto it. The Republican supermajority could then override it. But that's, you know, that's a long process. That's further extending
yes.
this lack of time without a budget. So do you think that when it gets to his desk that the governor should veto it based on how much further it could extend not having a state budget?
Well, I don't think his decision can be based on the how much further it'll extend, because if it gets to his desk, he's not responsible for the time that gets to his desk. He gave them a budget in March. So, you know, in theory, we could add a budget in April. And, you know, and then we wouldn't be waiting this long. So I don't think that should be a factor of his at all. I think that what will be a factor in his mind about vetoing the budget is just what's in it. If you get a strict budget that tries to do some good things for people, you know, I don't know that it gets vetoed. But if you get a budget full of policy, full of voting right restrictions, full of stealing government's powers, executive powers, then, you know, I don't know how he has to react to that. And personally, it has been a longstanding thing with me. I've been in for 10 years. I don't think policy belongs in the budget. I think that is unfair to voters. It's unfair to representatives, because our spending is the number one job that we have. Policy is not our number one job. Our job is not to figure out how to police people in their hospitals, bedrooms, doctor's offices, and things of that sort. Our job is to make sure that the people of this state get their tax money spent back on them in the most efficient way that we can get it spent, because it's supposed to be a synergistic effect instead of a, you know, we'll put it in some other places here and there because, as was quoted in the newspaper about a month ago, because you know the right people. That isn't how money ought to be spent. Money ought to be spent by looking at what the needs of the state are. And once you look at those needs, making sure that the state's spending that money in a way that is beneficial to those folks, whether they're Republicans, Democrats, whether they have access to leadership or they don't have access to leadership.
We're speaking with Representative Robert Reeves here on Robert Rules. And again, that's kind of the main thing that's going on at the state government. But there are a lot of exciting things that are happening in your district that I wanted to ask you about
yes.
while you're here, too. VinFast broke ground in Moncure since the last time you were on with us on its big manufacturing plant there. And we know that is a huge economic development boon for the state, but of course for Chatham County as well. What are your thoughts on the latest you've heard about that project getting started and what you've been hearing from VinFast about what they want to do with that manufacturing plant?
What I've enjoyed about the process with VinFast is how quickly they jumped into the community and tried to be a good corporate partner in the community. The initial one of the stories I told at the VinFast groundbreaking is still one of my favorite economic discussions I've ever had a chance to be a part of. And so we're lucky at Central Carolina Community College to have a president, Dr. Lisa Chapman, who is a homegirl. She was, from the area. She came up through our system, went on to the state system, and then came back to be president. But I was on the dais, and we were announcing VinFast, and, you know, everybody was really feeling good, and they had the speeches. And I came off the dais, and she was literally the first person to come up and give me a hug and say congratulations. And then she said, I need $50 million. And her point was, because VinFast had already talked to her about a pretty darn amazing facility that they're putting together to train their people that is really going to be unique among anybody on the East Coast. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And that's the kind of thing that VinFast has done. VinFast went out of its way. I know you saw the story about a week ago where they were able to have the church that had been there moved. They've done some other things, parkland, things of that sort. But they're really, really trying hard to be good corporate partners. And on top of that, it's very important to them not to bring in people to work here, but to have people, they've moved some of their executives here. And then on top of that, to have people that live here in these surrounding areas get the training and get the jobs there at VinFast. And that's important because you get some people like, we've got a company that has become a part of the budget discussions now that's talking about coming in and they're going to give us the $8 to $10 an hour jobs, but all the good jobs, they're bringing their people in from out of state. And, you know, you're like, how can you support that type of development? So VinFast has been amazing. I look forward to what they're going to do. And the most important thing that we've done with VinFast is we've created a corridor with Toyota, VinFast, and Wolfspeed that puts us ahead of everybody in the country when it talks about the discussions about where America is going to be in 20 years when it comes to energy, when it comes to tech development. We've really put ourselves on the map by putting these groups together.
And as you said, that is not only a statewide thing, that is a statewide and a national thing with that corridor. What is it like with that being in your district as well? Because I imagine it's a pretty important feather in your cap.
No, it is. It was one of the best feelings I had, and I told some folks last year, the hardest press conference I did was the Wolf Speed press conference. And I had butterflies, I was tearing up because I grew up here. And I know what Siler City was at one point. And I know that once we lost, you know, the manufacturing, the chicken plants and things of that sort, you know, suddenly you had a town that was just holding on. And to have that infusion of money in a place like Siler City was overwhelming. Knowing now that you had all of these folks who grew up with me, who are now adults and have, you know, some have adult children, now they've got a chance to have their children actually come back here instead of having to, you know, prepare for life, going to visit them a state away. And that's the thing you don't think of with economic development, is that you think about the money, you think about the prestige, but then when you get a certain age, all you're thinking about is, can my kids and grandkids stay here where they grew up? And that means the world. I mean, I think, you know, we talked off air about your hometown, and it does. It means the world to be able to stay near where you are, to be able to raise your children near their grandparents, to be able to see your old friends and old family members and always have a central place. I mean, nothing has meant more to me than that and the ability to help give that to people. And so now, if somebody chooses to leave Chatham County, they're choosing because they're just ready to go away from Chatham County. But they don't have to leave Chatham County to get a great job, great home, and a great experience.
Once again, we're speaking with Representative Robert Reeves here on Robert Rules, and we have a couple minutes left. You talked about growing up in the area. There's also some news regarding Pittsburgh and your hometown of Sanford.
Yes.
They have approved a utility merger that's been kind of on the horizon for the last couple of years, but their interlocal agreement is now in place, and that means that over the next little bit, we'll start to see them, the Sanford, help out Pittsburgh with that water infrastructure. Wanted to get your thoughts on those efforts as a method reacting to growth, because obviously the big talk around Pittsburgh for ages and ages has been, how are we going to get ready for all the people who want to come live in this pretty great spot?
Yeah, starting with Chatham Park. And what's been amazing to me is watching them work together and again, being able to be a part of that. One of the iterations of District 54 has been Chatham and Lee County. Unfortunately, our district changes just about every time there's an opportunity to change.
Of course.
But so, you know, I had a chance to be there on the ground floor when we started talking about the water. And water is such an important thing. I always give credit to Commissioner Mike Cross, who was on the Board of Commissioners whenever I first got on. And very first meeting we ever had wasn't about, you know, wooing his support. It wasn't about anything. He says, I want to talk to you about water. And Mike Cross was important in getting where I live now, Goldston, water. And we don't think about that. You know, you think water is, you know, 70% of the world's water. You know, we're never going to have a problem with water, but we do. Pittsburgh and Siler City have both had those problems. So the coordination and the collaboration between Pittsburgh and Sanford was something wonderful to see. It was seamless. They did their presentations together. They made sure to work together. They made sure to talk to DEQ and everybody we need to talk to in state government. And the representatives of John Sauls and Jim Bergen were amazing to work with in trying to make sure that we got this thing finished. Valerie Fasci, who's now moved on to Congress, was very important. But to watch that kind of collaboration and see the seamlessness of it tells you what we can do when we look out for each other. Because Sanford could have been, you know, sometimes you'll get areas that'll say, well, I'm not getting the direct benefits, so why am I going to do it? Sanford took the opposite position. They just said, look, I'm sure something good is going to happen for us, but the right thing for us to do is to make sure that Pittsburgh is on board for this growth and expansion.
Yeah, and they've been partnering with so many other rural but now growing areas,
yes,
too. It's again, yet another example for not just North Carolina communities, but elsewhere, too, of how this is possible if those infrastructure investments are made, which is pretty incredible. Time flies by. I'm sure we could talk about those topics much, much longer, but we have just a couple moments left. Anything else that you want your constituents to be thinking about in terms of what you guys are trying to work on in Raleigh? Or anything else happening around the community you want to flag for folks?
There are lots of things I'd love to discuss. What I hope voters saw is what happened in Ohio yesterday. Nothing is going to be more important in next year's vote than making sure that voters understand that that's where the power is. You decide what your government looks like, you decide what your communities are, and you've got to invest in making sure that you make good decisions when it comes down to that. And this isn't about picking D's or R's, this is about picking people that can govern. And I think that Ohio said last night, no, we know that we still need to have an active role in our ability to govern. We don't want to do anything that limits the roles of the voter when it comes down to governance and it comes down to our laws. So I was very happy to see that.
That is Representative Robert Reeves here on Robert Rules. Thank you, Representative Reeves, for stopping by. Great to have you on the air once again.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.